It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
I've heard a lot of funny pronunciations this week. I never knew there were that many.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Jorge Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here and checking out the series. You know what to do. Like what you see, what you hear, hit that subscribe button. I put out three new interviews every single week, new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, at Spotify, Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And that's me, Kyle Meredith, today talking with Scott Neustadter about Daisy Jones and the Six. Scott's is the screenwriter, showrunner, producer. You will know him from things like 500 Days of Summer. He did Paper Towns, The Fault in Our Stars. So let me now stop there for a second. This is one of my favorite shows that I've seen this year, last year, maybe even the year before. It's very hard to make a rock and roll movie, and I think they've done a fantastic job, although not a movie, it's actually a series, so, you know, 10-episode movie, however you want to look at that. I'm so excited to finally talk about this, and in fact, the only talking I've been able to do so far is with Suki Waterhouse, who was on the series last year. And it was before I had seen it. So now that I've seen it, getting to dig into this, to talk to Scott about taking what started as Taylor Jenkins Reid's book and making it into a movie that is ended up being produced by Reese Witherspoon's Sunshine Productions. You got an excellent cast that includes Riley Keough, Sam Claflin, Suki Waterhouse, Camila Marone. So we're going to get into all that, the difficulty and care of making a true representation of being in a band, finding that cast, having Sonic Youth's Kim Gordon as a consultant on the whole thing. Scott's also going to discuss what it's like bringing the songs to life with folks like Blake Mills, who is behind a lot of the songs, Phoebe Bridgers, Marcus Mumford, Jackson Brown, Taylor Goldsmith from Dawes, among many other songwriters. The chances of what it'll take, at least, to get this cast to actually tour the album and the possibility of a second season. All that and more. Let's get into this. We're talking Daisy Jones and the Six. It's Kyle Meredith with Scott Neustadter.
What's happening, Kyle? Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. I fell in love with this story so hard. I hadn't read the book, actually. My wife had read the book, and she was telling me the whole time that she was reading it and listening to the audio. You're going to love this. You're going to love this. And then I had Suki Waterhouse on the series last year, and we were talking about it, and she said, you're going to love this. And so finally, I see the show, and it's my favorite thing that I've seen, maybe in years. Seriously, what you all have done is amazing.
Thank you so much. That's great to hear. We put the first three up last week. We've got three more coming this week, and we're very excited for people to check it out.
So let's get back to the start here. This starts as a book, Taylor Jenkins Reid, who puts it out. How does it make its way into your lab?
So back in 2017, actually, Taylor finished writing the book and sent it to her manager, like as a galley in an email. He read it. It was totally, you know, unpublished, unfinished, uncorrected. And for whatever reason, Brad thought of me because I guess we had talked about music in the past. He knew I was kind of a music junkie and he thought I'd get a kick out of it. So he sent it my way. You know, rumors, Fleetwood Mac, obviously something that I care about passionately and really love. And I started reading this book, pretty convinced I was not going to love it, because how could you outdo the drama and the greatness of that true story? But I got about 100 pages in and I was like, this is fantastic. And I did something I wasn't supposed to do. My wife had just started running film and television for Reese Witherspoon's new company, Hello Sunshine. And I knew they were looking for projects. And I said to her, have you heard about this Daisy book? Because I know you're going to love it. And I know Reese is going to love it, because Reese and I had once talked about Stevie Nicks and our mutual love of that story. So I said, you got to get your hands on this book. And she did. And then together we kind of did the full court press on Taylor and convinced her to go with us to make the TV show.
It's not easy to make a rock and roll movie, show, anything. I mean, I think we can count on just a few fingers the great ones that have been made over the years that show what it's actually like to be in a band. I think almost famous for me is the crowning achievement up there. And you've had some good shows in the past, you know, decade or so, but none of them really hit the mark. This one does it. This one is exactly like... That had to be part of the conversation, because, again, there's not like you got a ton that goes, oh, yeah, we can do this. We can make a rock and roll movie.
No, it's true. We always said that the bar was very high, the bullseye very small. But if somehow we could do it, people would really pay attention. And obviously Almost Famous is an amazing example of how to do it right. What's interesting about Almost Famous is that it's about outsiders. You know, it's William's perspective, and he's not really a part of the band, and he's along for the ride, and it's about that sort of disconnect. This one was going to very much be about the artists themselves and the turmoil they're going through, and how they process their feelings and they put it into their work, which is not something that we'd really seen a lot before. And we knew that to do that right was going to require you know, a big group of like-minded individuals to kind of drill down on the authenticity and do something that most people would probably think, you know, the minutiae wouldn't be as interesting. But we wanted to kind of make it as dramatic and as fun as we could.
I mean, I've been in bands when I was younger, you know, high school, a little bit out of high school. And there's a little bit of PTSD watching this, because right. You go back, because it is dramatic if you let it be, you know, it is there. But I can also say that I've never seen the songwriting process authentically put into fiction in such a way. And I don't know what the trick is, and I don't know if you can answer, but how'd you do that when no one else could?
Well, that's very nice of you to say. I think we just were really interested in that part of it and wanted to zero in on how does this happen? You know, especially when it comes to songs that are inspired by heartbreak or frustration or, you know, whatever they're going through. You know, really started with what if your favorite band in the world only got together because they were trying to impress a girl? And, you know, when you think about sort of the Rolling Stones and the Beatles and just, you know, the biggest bands in the world, there was an impetus for why they got together. What was the, you know, they had to express themselves somehow. And all of that was just such fertile ground for drama for us. That and just in reading this book, you know, there's so many love stories involved. But it's all filtered through the songwriting, and they're coded messages to each other, and that will take the music and just give it another level that you know, you might not hear if you're just listening on the radio.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Scott Neustadter. And I want to get to the songs here in a minute, but you, of course, had to find the people to play those songs, to embody those songs. And there's not one person that I'm watching this and I'm like, oh, I don't feel like they're like, everybody was right on the mark. I would love to hear about that part, too. Who are you looking for? What type of people were you looking for? How many people did you see?
Yeah, there was a very long list of people who read for the show. And there was a, you know, a conversation that we had about whether or not we should hire musicians who could also act or actors who could sort of play music. We decided to go with the actors because I feel like 85% of this is, TV drama. That said, they had to convince you that they were a real band or the whole thing falls apart. We were supposed to shoot in April of 2020. And had we done that, I feel like we would have probably needed a little magic to convince you. But because of the pandemic, everything shut down for about 18 months. And these actors who had gotten the parts, and some of them were in England and some of them were in LA and some of them were in New York, they were sort of spread out all over the place. They didn't take time off. They actually used this as an opportunity to get better at their instruments, to kind of Zoom together and just talk and shoot the you know what, to become kind of like a band. So by the time that we were rolling cameras, they really felt like a unit, the way a real band does, and there wasn't that much fakery involved, which was unexpected for us, I have to say.
Yeah, when it finally got around to it, what were the jam sessions? I'm guessing that was a part of being on the set.
They were doing Zoom jam sessions for a while, yeah, which we have some video of, which was amazing. And then when we finally were able to all be in the same room, they had like a very intensive band camp where we had our music supervisors and our music producers kind of teach them how to move and how to kind of, you know, position their bodies on stage, all the things that these guys had never really done before. And then, you know, in this particular program, unlike most others, when you see Will Harrison's fingers playing a G chord on the guitar, that's where they're supposed to be. I mean, everything, we couldn't use takes where the fingers were not in the right places. So we really strove for that kind of authenticity, and I hope it comes through.
And you mentioned consultants. I kept seeing Kim Gordon's name up there. Are we talking Kim Gordon, Kim Gordon? Sonic Youth, Kim Gordon?
The Kim Gordon, yes. Kim Gordon is a friend of my co-showrunner, Will Grams. And obviously, Kim Gordon was in a band with her husband. So there's fraught, you know, drama inherent in that we were interested in. And she sat in the writer's room with us multiple times and told stories. And, you know, anytime we would pitch an idea that she would call BS on, we would have to throw it out. Yeah, that was the kind of, we really had a lot of experts around who could talk to us about this, their experiences and what was true. And, you know, that was always the North Star for us.
Yeah. You made my brain have to twist inside out because as I'm watching it, I think because I've had Kim on here quite a few times. And I thought the last time I had Kim on here, we were talking about what she listened to at home and she kept saying Rumors and Fleetwood Mac and
might
Tusk.
Have been why.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's like, wait a second, what was going on here?
Yeah,
it all incredible. Makes sense. Yeah, but you go with Patti Smith for the theme song. How did that land?
Yeah, I wanted a theme song that had a lot of drama to it, that sort of was telling this story without really telling the story, and came up with that idea pretty early on, and then just spent months and months trying to beat it, and no song beat it. No song kind of captured the magic and the drama and the energy. It's just a great TV theme song, actually.
Don't get tired of it. I mean, and I guess it's really obvious why you wouldn't say go for a Fleetwood Mac song. Was that ever thought of?
Well, there's a secret Fleetwood Mac song somewhere in the series that will surprise you. Because for a really long time, we were pretending that Fleetwood Mac is not a band that exists in this world. Let's not go there. And then our editor dropped a song in there in a certain spot. And we were like, whoa, the power was so intense that we ran with it. So I hope it's a cool surprise that people will enjoy when they get to episode 9.
Well, into the music as we're talking about. So Aurora, the album exists. The songs exist. You've all brought them to life, Blake Mills and all the co-writers. I'll start once again a bit broad. How did that whole process happen? Because again, you've got to make something out of nothing, but also something that sort of almost kind of exists.
Yeah, it's interesting. When you read a novel about music and they're describing songs and they're describing, you know, the power of a record, it's your brain can make it up in your head and it'll, you know, you just go with it. But that was not going to work in the TV version. We actually had to make the music, and we had to make the music good enough that all of the adjectives that are used to describe it, classic, unforgettable, timeless, all those really intense and very intimidating adjectives, we had to make them apply somehow. So we were never gonna do that. None of us are songwriters, Taylor included. And so we went and sought out kind of music producers and songwriters who were down for this experiment. And we ended up with Blake Mills and Tony Berg, who operate out of Sound City. And we sat down with them, you know, in the room where Mick Fleetwood first heard Lindsey Buckingham play the guitar. And we said, here's what we're going to need. And they said, that sounds like a fun thing. They've never tried this before, but to write in character seemed like an entertaining thing. And Blake was going to ask a lot of his friends to co-write with him. And, you know, he's got a lot of great, amazing friends, Marcus Mumford and Phoebe Bridgers and Jackson Brown. And we knew we were in really good hands. I'm not sure they knew just how hard work this was going to be and how many songs we were going to need, but we worked together for, you know, 2 years and change. And it was really a wonderful process.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Scott Neustadter.
Because even beyond Aurora, there are songs even beyond the album. I mean, how many in total was there?
Did you remember? It's around 24 that we used, but they probably wrote closer to 30. And Blake wanted to write everything. He wanted to write the Simone Jackson disco songs. He wanted to write the sort of psychedelic band that opens up for the Dunn Brothers in Pittsburgh. He wanted to write every single original song that is mentioned in this. And we kept saying, you know, like we could farm this out. We could get another. It's not that big a song, you know, like it's only going to be heard through the speakers. And he's like, I don't care. And he did all of it. And I think the Aurora album's amazing. And then eventually we'll have a soundtrack record of all the other ancillary songs. And it's a really amazing crop of songs that we're so excited about.
I'm really excited to hear that because there were songs in there. What you like even, you know, like the Sixes first hits. And I'm forgetting the name of it right now, you know, before Daisy comes along and they've got their first taste of it. Like there are those songs and you're like, oh yeah, that didn't make the album. Where does that exist at this point?
Yeah. What's fun is that, and we talked about this at length, the Dunn Brothers have a certain sound. Even the Six has a certain sound before Daisy gets there and she changes the sound. And then Daisy's writing a certain kind of song before she meets Billy and the band and has more of a singer-songwriter sort of quality to it also. And it has to sound different when they come together. And so you've got three very different sounds that are happening and you can track it with your ears. And it's really like Blake did such an amazing job to kind of tell the story just through the songs themselves that I think, you know, that it'll have repeat listens and you'll get even more out of it than if you're just watching the show, you know, cold.
And not even just the sounds from that, but you have the different versions of the songs themselves. And I think that's what I was like, maybe most impressed with the songwriting because you had to, he or whoever had to create a version that was almost there. You know, it's like, how do you pull that off? And by the way, to, as a viewer, to know it's not there, like, oh my God, it reminded me of watching the Get Back documentary and there they are starting on the song. And it's so frustrating to know that it's not there yet. Just get there already.
Yeah, that was a huge influence on us too, and I think showing that is very important. You know, you have the finished product, but then this series is going to show you what it was like before, and kind of undercut this genius myth that everything comes out fully formed. I think it was important to us to show that it is a process, and you have to work at it. And these two characters have a very different type of work ethic, and hopefully, it's very interesting and entertaining to watch them do it. But the process itself is kind of what the show is about. I think Blake did an unbelievable job convincing you that it's authentic and real.
Speaking of convincing, you're going to get them all to go out on tour? We're going to see that?
I mean, we'd love nothing more than that. It's probably at this point, I think all these actors are going to go on to do such incredible stuff and be in high demand. I wonder if the schedule will ever work, but it would be a dream to get them together and perform. And we know they can do it. We had them perform a show for us before we started filming to kind of prove to us and to themselves that they could do it. And they made the set list and they didn't have any accompaniment. They did it all on their own. We made them kind of get into costume and get up on stage and play a show for about 50 to 60 people. And they nailed it. And it was incredible.
Well, as much as I am a fan, and I mean this, of when someone says it's a limited series, I'm like, I like a beginning and an ending. This is one of the times where I went, well, does it have to be? Because the second scene, you know, is a reunion. Just, it makes the sense. I mean, like, would you want that to happen? Would you allow that to happen?
If there is an interest and a desire to see more, I feel like that I'd love these characters. I would be interested in seeing where it goes as well, and obviously interested in another 12 to 15 songs of original music from Blake and his group. That would be pretty cool. But there's also a version of this which is, you know, a different band in a different time in a different environment, which would also be really cool to watch. One of the things I love about it is they're in a very specific kind of pocket in the 70s. They're doing that Southern California, you know, soft rock pop sound. But all around them is this other scene that's happening. You know, you've got punk is coming and disco is happening. And there's just so many different genres of music that would be fun to do this kind of story in the future, if such a thing was of desire to anyone.
Well, I completely trust you all at this point. So if the same team is doing it, I'm in on that. Fortunately or unfortunately for all of these actors, they're now going to get a taste of what it's like to have ever been in a famous band who did break up, because for the next however long, it's going to be so when's the reunion going to happen? Because that's what they always get now.
It's true. You had Suki on. Suki's touring and has a record out, and she's a full-blown rock star. I mean, I think when we started this, she was playing the piano with two fingers. It's pretty amazing to watch.
And what incredible music that she's making, seriously, yeah. The album, the EP and everything that she's done. Scott, seriously, you are a part of one of the best things that I've seen in such a long time. Daisy Jones and the Six. This is so good. So good. Thank you so much for the work you've done and taking the time to talk about it.
Thank you, Kyle. It's great to talk to you.
And my thanks to Scott Neustadter. Daisy Jones and the Six, airing now on Prime Video. Thanks to you for checking out the series. If you want more, by the way, just search deeper in on this podcast, Kyle Meredith with Suki Waterhouse. You can find a bit more of that conversation there as well. But thanks for checking it out. Please do hit that subscribe button before you get out of here. Again, you do that, I'll give you 3 interviews every week. New and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so you can keep up to date with your favorite artists and discover the new ones at iTunes, Apple Podcast, at Spotify, Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Then after that, head over to WFPK.org. It's where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern. It's an hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the old social media spots. That's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. All three of the addresses at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time. Consequence Podcast Network.
That was so cool. Thanks, Kyle. I'm glad you love it so much.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.